The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Path 7 in partnership with Advertising Week. Path 7 helps brands scale partner marketing with seamless content distribution, real-time lead data, and consistent brand experiences. Powered by partners, built for performance.
So I'm delighted to welcome Mark from Wonder Hatch to this edition of the Business of Marketing here at Advertising Week Europe in London. Mark, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's really nice to be here. Excited. It's actually my first Ad Week, believe it or not.
An Ad Week virgin.
Yeah, absolutely. But so far, it's been a really enjoyable experience. And yeah, it's nice to see some people that I know and meet a lot of people that I don't.
Fantastic. I love that combination. So, first of all, just tell us a little bit about your new role and tell us a little bit about what Wonder Hatch does. What problems do you solve?
I'm Mark Webben. I'm co-founder and chief executive of Wonder Hatch. If you asked me who Wonder Hatch were 6 years ago, I would have said that we were a production company, a very transactional production company. We've been on quite a journey over the course of the last 6 years and the last 18 months or so in particular. And we're now a full-blown creative agency, providing strategy, creative and production services to a wide range of clients.
Give us some examples.
Okay, so clients would include Cafe Nero. They would include Spotify. They would include Ford. They would include property clients like Knight Frank, a lot of super prime residences that you might see. They would include entertainment clients like the British Film Institute. A real wide mix. 888 and also Tango. So a lot of variety, which I think keeps everyone in our business really happy.
I love that. It's the spice of life. So tell me a little bit about sort of the role of partnerships. Who are your kind of key partners?
A key partner for us would be Digital Cinema Media. We enjoy working with those guys enormously. For us, they're a fantastic cultural fit. They're just really nice people, and they really care for their clients. And I think we're really privileged to help them take care of their clients as well. So they've enabled us to work with NSBCC, Brixton Finishing School, Google, Sky Glass, which has been fantastic. And likewise, we're really happy to be introducing some of our clients to them, actually, and get some of our clients who've not advertised in cinema to start getting excited about that. And it's been really interesting to see how those conversations have grown and developed.
There's one thing about this industry, is it, that it very much is an ecosystem made up of kind of partners. And you know, you see that right as we look around the event today. How important is that sort of, you know, ecosystem to you, you know, philosophically?
Look, it's fundamental. I won't lie. I mean, I'm fairly new to this sector, and I'm very open about that. I'm very honest about that. I'm very transparent about that. We have joined a couple of communities recently, including the Alliance of Independent Agencies, and I think across this sector as a whole, I'm really inspired by how open everybody is to sharing information, to sharing advice, and to making introductions to people. I think we all need to coexist. I think if we hide ourselves away and think we can do it all by ourselves, that's not gonna end well. So I think people appreciate as well us as an agency being very open and honest and saying, no, we know this really, really well, but we don't know this, but we'd really like to learn.
And of course, that leads me to another C word. So content. And you know, we talked a little bit there about community. Tell me a little bit about your kind of views and perspectives on the power and role of content.
So, we're a content-driven agency, okay? And our background as a production agency means that, you know, that was our real kind of touch point. It's something we know really, really well. And it's one of those things that actually we do talk about knowing really, really well. And I think you can hopefully see that in the quality of our output. However, what I would also say is it's really quite easy to make content that looks really good. what isn't so easy is making content that does what it's supposed to do. And I think, you know, if we can make sure that it looks the way it needs to look and looks as if the brand has made it, first and foremost, rather than a third party agency, I think that's what makes it authentic. And that's what will give our client that real customer connection. So I think, you know, when we look at content, I think we always come at it from the problem side first, understand what the problem is, what the client is trying to do, who they're trying to communicate to, and then work backwards from there. Making it look great, as I said, is easy, but it has to actually do its task. So real understanding, tacit understanding of that task is fundamental.
It's really interesting. I think we're going to talk a little bit more about measuring and metrics in a minute, but just staying on the kind of content track for a second. So what, you know, here we are bombarded by media and content all day, every day in our lives. You know, what for you are some of the kind of the principles that kind of underpin kind of the, you know, effective content creation? If it all looked great, fantastic, but what are those principles that kind of really make it work, as you said?
So look, I'll come back to the point I made earlier that the best content is the content that feels as if the client has made it. So, you know, it's not all about highly polished production values. It shouldn't be. You know, the content shouldn't. You're trying to create a visual content, you're trying to create a visual identity for a brand. Okay, so some of our clients, like Spam, for example, my God, they're a fun client to work with. But, you know, the content that we produce for them will look and feel very different to something we might do for a luxury brand or for a super prime, you know, property residence or what have you, or Raffles, who are another client of ours. So it should. So for me, I think if the content that we're producing looks, feels and behaves as if it's come directly from our client and the brand, then that to me is success. And that makes the consumer feel that the brand is speaking directly to them with no filter in between, no overproduced production, you know, or solution in the way. It's, you know, we're there to be a facilitator, not a barrier.
I'm going to ask you a hard question, I think, on the back of that, which is, how do you actually do that? How do you create content that makes it feel as if it's been created by the brand themselves? What is your secret sauce, I suppose, is what I'm really asking for?
It's not a secret sauce. I think, look, we're sat here today surrounded by incredibly talented people who will probably tell you a very similar answer. It's time. It's spending time with your client. It's asking the right questions. Sometimes what we'll do with our clients is we'll invest time just getting to know them as people first. It's kind of like when we're interviewing, you know, a client for a talking heads film or a documentary film, what have you. You don't just get the cameras rolling and start asking questions straight away. What I will do, sometimes it might be me interviewing these people, is you spend a bit of time with them. You might go for a coffee with them. You might have a lunch with them. You might, you know, go to a pub with them and have a couple of drinks. So you get to know them. If you get to know them, then you get to understand how to ask them questions, how to frame those questions in the right way that will get you those authentic answers. Once we get those authentic answers from our clients, and we know that they are telling us their truth, which is really important, then that will start helping us to ask those right strategic questions in the right way to get to the crux of the issue and to help us really understand how we can build the foundations of a content-driven solution from there.
Okay, and I'm going to flip it now and ask you about the consumer, the customer. I get the authentic point, but what does the consumer, the customer of today, want from that brand?
So look, firstly, everyone's a consumer, all right? So sometimes just really understanding those consumers can start with really understanding ourselves and what compels us to want to know more about a particular brand or a particular product, you know, and why we choose one product over another, you know. And, you know, I think a lot of that is about peace of mind. We all pay a premium for a product that gives us peace of mind. So, you know, I think that's kind of really interesting, and you know, I think a good place to start. But then you have to think about that. You know, you have to think about the shape of those consumers as well. And that's where, you know, one of the things that's excited me most about Wonder Hatch and our, you know, significant development, I think, over the last 18 months, is we've now got strategies. Strategists in-house, you know, we've got a strategy department. And you know, we started off, you know, as I mentioned earlier, as a pure production company, and then our clients, as a trust grew with our clients, they would ask us to interrogate creatives. You know, maybe we ask us to come up with our own creative ideas, and that enabled us to build out that creative part of our offering. And then as you keep going upstream, obviously the next part is that strategy part as well. And what strategy is, and we do a lot of work in property, okay, we do. More by accident, but by design, but it's been a very happy accident, actually, and it's something that I think we're really good at. But, you know, you wouldn't buy a house until you've done a survey, right? So when I talk to people about strategy and why it matters, you know, I think, you know, why would you invest in content or a creative until you've done that strategy piece? The strategy bit is the kick in the tires. It's the kick in the tires in the car showroom. It's doing that survey, you know, before you commit to buying or buying a house. So that strategy bit is fundamental. That's where we really get under the bonnet and really understand those customers. And sometimes, because we're very lucky that we work in multiple sectors, God, we learn all sorts of crazy stuff. You know, we've been doing a lot of research at the moment in retirement living, which is fascinating to understand that audience, who, by the way, very often forgotten, I think, by advertisers. And that's a whole other thing. Our strategist has just published an amazing article on that boomer generation, by the way. And I mean, they've got all the money, you know, they've got huge amounts of cash, but they're not being,
yeah,
they're not being spoken to or recognized as a real kind of powerful, you know, audience base that needs to be really, really respected. So that's been kind of really interesting. But understanding how you know, position a grant or a campaign, you know, to really kind of hone in on an audience and resonate with them in a big way, which, by the way, feels authentic. Comes back to that point about it's the brand speaking directly to them. You know, that's where success really starts to happen, and that's what we're seeing.
And how important, alongside all of that, is entertainment.
Entertainment is everything, I think. And look, when we talk about entertainment, I don't just mean our entertainment clients, you know, like, which I would include, you know, digital cinema media. I would include the BFI. I would include Spotify, and I would include NBC and, you know, a host of others. You know, content has to be entertaining, right? As I said, you know, we're all consumers. We all want to be entertained in all our messaging, you know, and whether I'm communicating to my team internally, or whether I'm, you know, having a meeting with a client, you know, you want to try and be entertaining. But every piece of content that we produce must entertain in some way. And then look, there are, you know, think about things like adolescence. That's entertaining, but that doesn't mean it's entertaining at the cost of, you know, powerful messaging. You know, so whether you're doing a flippant feast for a fun brand, or whether you're working with the NSPCC on something that's really moving and that really matters, you still need to hold your audience's attention and make sure that they're with you from the start of that piece of content to the end. Because very often that message and that call to action will come at the end. So you better make damn sure that they're there with you.
You talked about bringing strategists in, and you just used the team word. So tell me a little bit about how you like to structure your teams.
So that's like really interesting for us, actually. Like, we've gone through a lot of change, and we're still going through that change. And I think change should never be a full stop. It should always be just a series of commas, you know, and so that you're adapting as the world changes. But for us as an organization, you know, we've completely turned the structure of our business upside down. I think we've created a culture of empowerment. That's, you know, huge for us culturally. So, I mean, you know, just small things like, you know, our new brand film and our new websites and the process of hiring our amazing incoming, you know, new creative director who just joined us, you know, a couple of weeks ago. We gave, you know, what on the surface people might consider to be junior members of our staff the mandate to actually run those projects and programs. But actually, I don't see them as juniors at all. I see them as the future of the business and people that we need to be listening to now and today. And actually, we are. So from a cultural standpoint, yeah, I think we are probably slightly different to a lot of other agencies, perhaps, in that I think we follow up those words with real actions, and those actions are already in place now. And that's really exciting for me. I think the team feel really listened to. I think the team feel really invested in. We went to, I mentioned earlier, this was my first ad week, right? First ad week. I'm now, 3 hours in? Last year was my first Cannes Lion. And it was our first Cannes Lion as a team. And we took the entire team. Every single person in the organization went. That was a little bit different, possibly. But I think, when I talk about growing the agency, I talk about growing it from the inside out. And what I mean by that is by growing the people, in our team, giving them the opportunity to have experiences, giving them exposure to Adweek, to Cannes Lion, giving them the opportunity to make big decisions for the business, giving them the opportunity to make mistakes, actually. Culturally, that's absolutely huge. I think, that's also that attitude we take into our relationships with our clients as well. We do try and empower our clients. Our clients are executive producers on our projects. We don't keep them at arm's length. We really embrace them and bring them in. And we do recognize that what we do and what we deliver is very often the fun bit in the in-tray for a lot of our clients. My wife's a marketeer. She tells me religiously 90% of her job is really boring. So she's really inspired me to make sure that the bit I do, include our clients, we make sure it's really fun. And actually, part of our, we do try and help our clients develop a little bit as well, I think. And, not in a trite way, but in a sort of genuinely authentic way as well.
Cultures, internal and external, right?
Absolutely. We host these events called Wonder Chats, which are just incredibly informal, getting together with a bunch of clients from specific sectors, and they have no branding, no agenda. The only agenda is we just invite people we like, and we introduce them to other people we like, and then we facilitate them growing their own networks, and that's really powerful. And the pleasure that we derive from seeing our clients make friends with other clients of ours and find that they have these connections. And actually that can very often lead to collaboration. That's just really neat. That's just really fun. But also it builds, I think, really strong roots with our clients as well, because, I think everybody in Adweek at the moment is, people are fixated about new business. But you can't be overly fixated on new business at the cost of, your existing client base as well. Delivering more value and being a proper partner rather than a supplier, I think that's fundamental, and that's absolutely a culture piece as well.
When you were reorging and restructuring and pivoting, changing, bringing in a strategist, tell me a little bit more about some of the skills, the roles, the attributes that you were sort of looking to bring in. The world's moving at quite a pace at the moment.
Jim,
as you said, series of commas rather than full stops, right? But
yeah,
it's moving fast at the moment. How are you adapting in terms of your talent and your skills and their attributes?
So look, I mentioned earlier that we, empowered, some of the younger members of our team we gave them responsibility of probably the most important hire that we will make in terms of our new creative director. Remember, we're transitioning from a production company to a creative director. We have in-house creative directors already, but we wanted somebody that was going to build a boat for us, and give us a vision. But we let, pretty junior members, I don't like calling them junior members, but some of the younger members of our team, we gave them that responsibility. Okay, so we empowered them to tell us the shape of person that we should have in our organization. That's really powerful. That's really powerful for the person that's coming in, but it's really powerful, the people in our team. It's really powerful when we tell our clients that we've done that as well. And they kind of really love that. We've now got, we're small. I think we're really, I won't say beautifully formed, but we're really nicely formed actually. And, you know, but again, that's transition. And you know, but we've made a huge amount of progress. Seven girls, seven guys, incredibly diverse and multicultural team. And we've got a team of, you know, it's really interesting asking people in the team about the kind of business that they want to work for. What's incredibly rewarding is then saying to them, well, okay, go and build it for us then. And you know, I think rather than enforcing a culture on a team, I think what we're really good at and what I'm really proud of is actually we're helping, we're giving our you know, my colleagues and our colleagues the opportunity of creating that place that, you know, we really want them to feel is their home, that they really want to be. And that gives you stickability. You know, I think our team really want to work for us. How we're using PR, to promote the individuals within our team at every level. And, you know, you might, you know, some people might think, well, hang on, you don't want to raise people's profiles too much because, you know, they might get headhunted. But I think if you make them feel that they're leaving a business that they're building, that they're not going to.
The thing is, you know, what if you kind of don't do that and they stay, right?
Exactly. So, you know, I think, you know, culture is everything, but it should never be a culture that I'm imposing on my team. Because that would be quite arrogant for me to think I know what our culture should be. But when you have a collectivity to how you decide what that culture should be and a really inclusive approach to how you build your boat, then everyone wants to be on board.
Let's talk about measurements and metrics. What kind of KPIs and metrics matter most to you?
So, look, I think if I'm thinking about that internally, then it's people's happiness and people's confidence and seeing individuals within the team grow. You know, and feeling that they have a voice and feeling that they're listened to, and then suddenly them, you know, realizing they're a really safe space and that they can come and come with ideas and, you know, and thoughts on how we can grow as a business. And that's, you know, I think what people give you is a great way of measuring how happy they really are within the business. Okay. Externally with the clients, it, you know, that's fascinating because, you know, I mentioned property earlier. Now, there's a sector where your KPI is very finite. Hello, Mark. I've got 85 luxury properties here with an average price point of 10 million. I want you to help me sell them. So, I mean, that's immeasurable if ever there was one. But that's kind of quite different as well because there is a full stop to that measurement. Whereas when you're doing perhaps a brand building piece or what have you, you know, it's slightly different and it moves on and it kind of rolls on. But sometimes it's, I have X number of things that I want to sell and I want you to help me sell them quickly at the price I need to sell them at to make profit. So you can actually see that really, really quickly. You know, and you know, that's where you know when you're doing stuff well. But for other clients, it's an ongoing piece, isn't it? And sometimes also it's, when it's a, you know, a repositioning thing, it's quite difficult to sort of nail down that kind of KPI. It's a little bit, you know, intangible actually, and sometimes it might even just be a feeling or a, if it's an internal piece, you know, that's kind of really nice and fun as well. And then you can get some of those measurables that I spoke about with respect to my own team. So it does change. I think what's interesting for me is as our business has changed is, you know, our own approach to those measurables internally. I talked about some of the fluffy stuff, but it has to be underpinned with some of the harder stuff as well. And I think for us as a business, as we've kind of grown up, we've sort of embraced that, a bit afraid of it. We're not using it as a stick to beat ourselves with, but I think we're using it as something to aspire to and seek to attain.
I love it. And you're pretty excited already from this conversation. I can't believe you've only been enrolled for as long as you have. Just the way you're talking about the business and the passion is coming across really loud and clear. But tell me a little bit more about, I suppose, what's exciting you right now.
Problems excite me. We wouldn't exist if clients didn't have problems, right? I get really excited about the problems with my business because that's given me things to fix and improve. I think if our business was working perfectly and seamlessly, then, you know, where's the kind of, you know, where do I kind of go from here? So I think problems really excite me. I think they can be springboards for amazing things and amazing work, both, you know, individually. When I look at people within my team, it's, you know, development points to them. Collectively as a team internally. But I get really excited, you know, listening to my clients talk about their problems and the shape of their problems as well. Because very often I think a client will walk into a room with us and think that they know what the solution to their problem is. But actually sometimes it might be something completely different. And that's really fun to get to that point together in partnership, in collaborating, you know, with your client rather than just being a supplier solution. That's also, I think, why we transition from a production agency to a creative agency, because sometimes your job is to challenge what the clients bring to you.
So without necessarily revealing any names, bring that to life for me. And that can be either, you know, one of the problems inside the business that you're, you know, excited about, or it could be, you know, client X, you know, walking in. So I don't mind which one, could be both, but I want you to be just between you and me. It's not going to go any further.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so let me have a little think about this. I'll probably talk in more general terms rather than getting into the nitty gritty. But you might, let's do a property actually, right? Let's do property. I think a lot of people in property forget that they're dealing with consumers. All right. So very often, you know, property clients might say, okay, I need some content to help me sell X or to help me to promote this development here. What? Okay, that's great. And then they'll think that what they need might be real product-driven content, you know, which is what I call, where's the what, isn't it? This is what you will get for your money. This is what you will buy. But people make decisions based on emotion, all right? So I often will challenge people on that and say, yeah, okay, the what might be important, but that comes at a different point in the sales cycle, actually. But to get them to that point, you better tell them what the why is, okay? And you better pull those emotional levers and you better make them able to imagine themselves here. And you better, you know, tell them you know, what this will deliver to them as a human being and the feeling it will evoke for them every morning when they wake up and are looking out the window and who their neighbors might be and what their life might look like and how it will make them more whole rather than telling them about the bricks and mortar. Because, you know, buying a home is one of the emotional things we ever do. It shapes who we become as people. Yeah. So lean into that a little bit more. The product bit will come further down the sales cycle. But let's right now get them to stop in their tracks and get them to feel an emotional connection. Always comes back to emotion. Get them to feel an emotion connection with this thing. Because that will drive them to want to learn more. My job as a marketer is not to sell a goddamn thing. It's to market something. And I'm marketing a feeling very often. I would say that's the sector which is very dry, which is pretty conservative. The reason we're successful in this space is because we bring emotion to it. I think there's quite a good example, perhaps.
That's a great example. Thank you. I kind of feel a bit weird asking you this question because it's coming across in droves anyway, but how do you personally kind of stay curious and motivated?
I'm curious every day. That's why I'm here. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. But I, you know, I love that fact. I'm really nosy. When I'm interviewing people, to join our business, right, it's fascinating for me because, as I mentioned earlier, you know, what I'm really passionate about is empowering other people in the team to own the process. But of course, I have to meet them at some point. By the time I meet people, I know that they can do the task that they're being hired to do. Okay. So I'm therefore interested in three things. Curiosity is fundamental. They've got to be curious as hell. Otherwise, they're not in the right place. Okay, it's because curiosity, that's goals. It comes back to asking questions, feeling in a safe space to ask those questions, right? So that's fundamental. Then it's obviously culture. And not just, will you fit into this culture? No, I'm not really interested in that. Will you add to our culture and move our culture in the right way? That's absolutely fundamental for me. And then, you know, the final part, you know, is drive. You know, I've got a lot of drive. I'm very driven. But I'm not driven. The shape of drive is really interesting for me. And for me, I always ask everybody when I'm interviewing them, you know, are you driven? Of course, everyone always says yes. But then I say, where did your drive come from? And that's the real kind of separator for me, because anyone who's got drive knows where their drive has come from. And they can answer that question quite quickly and quite authentically, that word again. And then when they tell me where their drive comes from, then you understand the shape of their drive. Now, is it that fire underneath them that propels them up? Or is it that aspirational drive and they're trying to reap something? If I know the shape of their drive, then I'll know how to manage them and I'll know how to motivate them. But yeah, I think, you know, that curiosity, that will never leave me. And as I mentioned earlier, I celebrate what I don't know, and there's a lot. So I think I'm going to be curious for a long time.
And going back, what sort of wisdom have you learnt? What do you wish you'd known earlier?
I would say it's not my wisdom. Well, the only wisdom I have is don't ever be afraid of asking questions from people who know more than you. And I've been very lucky, particularly over the course of the last few weeks, I would say. And I won't name check any people, but I would say that this community is very giving. But I am picking up, I'm like a magpie, a wisdom magpie. So I'm trying to pick up little pieces of wisdom from everybody. I'm very transparent about what I don't know. I'm a collector of other people's knowledge. And then I try and apply that within our own unique culture.
Mark, thank you for joining us on the Business of Marketing here at Adweek.
Thanks for having me. Thanks very much.
The Business of Marketing podcast was brought to you by Path 7, powered by partners, built for performance.